Chapter 14, The Other Side. New email from Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, The Other Side. Hi, Julie. Yep, The Other Side. I guess that requires an explanation. Okay, cliff notes first. If we don't go to the other side, the Bobos won't have enough time or resources to heal Tesla and Marie, build the MERD, get it all back to our dimension, fix the paradox, and live happily ever after. So what the hell is the other side, and why do we have to go there? Gigi's getting mind-briefed on the whole thing by the Bobos as we climb aboard a ship. It's like a huge hovercraft, very shallow and broad, gigantic, but maybe only 5 feet off the ground. And Julie, it's furry. I mean, even in movies and shit, have you ever seen a furry spaceship? I don't even want to know if this thing is alive, because if it is, we're climbing right into its mouth without even putting up a fight. Anyway, now we're inside this furry ship, not alive, based on my expert analysis, gliding along towards the other side, whatever that is, and I'm sitting next to Gigi and I nudge her and whisper, "By the way, Mom would love your hair." She jerks her head around to me. "Huh, that's so weird." "What?" "I don't know, like I just had the most intense deja vu, like when you just said that about my hair, I remembered a conversation we didn't even have about Mom. And about she'd burp me when I was a baby." "Holy cow, honey, we did just have that conversation, back in Paris. And did I pat your back and you burped?"
"Yeah."
She pats my back again and I pretend to burp, and she asks,
"Gigi's ghost? Is that where I just was?"
"Something like that, I guess. I'd say stuff's getting even weirder, but you already know that. Hey, when are you going to tell us about the other side?" So Gigi the interpreter starts downloading what she found out from the Bobos. In the beginning, oh shit, wait, I already fucked it up. There is no beginning. Whatever, I'll explain a little further on. Anyway, Gigi's having a tough time getting a super clear story out of these Bobos, but it looks like they've been around forever. And when I say forever, I mean forever. Like what they told us about the Big Bang? They asked me how many Big Bangs there were, so of course I said one. And they were like, duh. So I said 11, just to be a wise ass, and they shook their heads and rolled their eyes and told Gigi we should imagine a Big Bang happening every second. And that's closer to actual reality and the true definition of infinity. And beyond even that, you guessed it, these dudes know all about the enfolding multiverse, that field of potential and forces more primary than gravity and light and even time, forces that our physical reality can't even perceive or explain. I know, mindfuck, right? I was having trouble keeping up too, so Gigi slowed down and reduced the whole rambling furry alien story and philosophy into the Book of Bobo. As told by Gigi Collins, embellishments, opinions, and other annoying interruptions provided by yours truly. Chapter 1, Verse 1, We Are Nameless. Okay, so mystery number one solved. These cute little furballs aren't named Bobo. I think we all knew that part already. In fact, they aren't named anything at all. The concept of names isn't something they need, as they communicate telepathically and live and act more like a herd or a hive than individuals. Of course, that doesn't stop me from naming every single one that I see, like Spritzy the Purple Bobo and Dong Dong the Green Bobo and Waptastic. I mean, you could name these things forever and never run out of names because, you know, forever. But damn it, I'm going to try. Gigi interrupts my naming.
Dad, I'm on the first verse. You going to do this the entire time?
No, sorry, no more naming. Wait, just one more. This guy looks like a moopy. Hey, moopy. Gigi gives me another eye roll hug and moves on. That's my girl. Chapter 1, Verse 2. If a leg exists, it must be humped. Okay, I added this one, but come on, it's like central to their history and belief system, I'm sure. They actually never tell Gigi about the leg humping thing. I guess that's a mystery for another millennia. My personal take? Like their universal sign of peace, the middle finger, they use the leg hump thing as a sign of affection, not knowing that dogs in our dimension do the same thing, but for ever so slightly different reasons. It's funny how we can't eliminate our subjective memories when we experience something new. Like if we never saw a dog hump a leg, we might do it ourselves. Shit, now I can't stop imagining people running around humping each other's legs in public. Okay, next. Chapter 1, Verse 3. If you see a cigarette butt, it must be eaten. Yes, I added this one too, but I asked about their mouths, like why?
And Gigi said the gist she got was that it was a vestige, like our appendix. Like many Big Bangs ago, they stopped using them to speak because of the telepathy thing. In fact, the only Bobo we've heard utter a single sound is our Bobo. Our Bobo rocks. When he's not being annoying about it, repeating bee's knees or stop drop a million times. Chapter 1, verse 3. We dance. I mean, of course they dance. But can I tell you, this whole time I was thinking Bobo just dances for the heck of it, right? Wrong. Their dance is a celebration of the intertwined dance of free will and destiny. They believe, and who am I, barely passing philosophy major from a D3 college, to argue, they believe that the multiverse is neither deterministic nor random, but some glorious combination of the two, that free will and destiny dance together forever, sometimes leading, sometimes following, but always in balance. Well, they're supposed to always be in balance. Chapter 1, verse 4, Balance. Oh boy, the Bobos are super big into balance, and here's where we get to the other side. See, eventually these Bobos found their way to the center of their galaxy, at the center of their universe, to the two-dimensional event horizon of a supermassive black hole. And can you guess what they found when they peeked through the crystal-clear pane of that event horizon? Yep, the other side. Or more specifically, a mirror image dimension. See, the black hole at the center of a universe turns out to be a gateway to the infinite other dimensions, a natural version of the interdimensional transfer apparatus. But the dimension directly on the other side of the event horizon is its exact opposite. Where one dimension is ruled by peace and light, its opposite is ruled by war and darkness. Where one is ruled by order and truth, its opposite is ruled by chaos and lies. Where one is ruled by chocolate, its opposite is ruled by vanilla. Okay, I'll stop. Anyway, for a dimension to remain stable, there must be a balance between it and its opposite here at the center of the universe. In the Bobos' case, when the two dimensions discovered each other, the Bobos from our side urged for peace and balance, but the opposites, being not only opposites but complete assholes, demanded disharmony and instability. The opposites believed that only through complete destruction of physical reality could they master what was behind it all. Yes, you guessed it, the enfolding multiverse. Now, you know Bobos are lovers, not fighters, but they weren't about to let physical reality be destroyed, so the unavoidable happened. The Edge War. Right at the razor's edge of the two-dimensional event horizon, imagine lightsabers and body armor and dilithium torpedoes or whatever the hell they used on Star Trek, and giant ships colliding in mid-space. Okay, now stop imagining that, because none of that shit happened. The battles in the Edge War were more like open-field spectacles, hand-to-hand combat across the vast stretches of both sides of the Edge, Bobos and opposites popping through the plane to the other side and back again for millions, they lasted more time than we humans can imagine, through innumerable Big Bangs. But eventually, the Bobos won, achieving the balance required to stabilize physical reality. Balance. Check. Since then, they've sent out scouts to watch out for and fix imbalances to innumerable dimensions through the black hole. The only problem with this method of interdimensional travel? It's completely random and a one-way trip. I interrupt Gigi. Aw, Bobo took that for the team? A one-way trip away from home? Gigi nods, giving Bobo a little chin scratch. He knew he'd find his way home eventually. He says we all do. Wow. I imagine Bobo getting flung through a black hole to Abba the Cockroach King's dimension, sitting on a mountain for 50,000 years, which is nothing to them, just chilling, keeping an eye out for imbalance, and then he sees the ITA for the first time, and then finds me and Pete, and gets clocked on the head with a plumber's wrench, and can't communicate, and watches the whole chaos with Tesla unfold. Wait, nah, he didn't just watch. How many times has Bobo nudged us in the right direction? Or outright put his life on the line for each of us? Damn, he got his head chopped off for us, exploded himself into a million pieces in the epic battle for the multiverse, and dove headfirst into the blue juice to save Gina Phillips. I reach out with my hands, and he takes them in his, and I finally understand. He's been helping us keep balance in the physical reality we see around us, together. I laugh. This whole time,
calling you Bobo. Sorry about that, dude. He shakes his head, so I look to Gigi. What do you say?
He says he likes the name. You were the first being to give him an identity, and having an individual identity is fun. He says it's the bee's knees.
I laugh and repeat it to him. Bee's knees, huh? And he whispers back, bee's knees.
Wait, Bobo, how did you know how to get back to your home? How did you know the combination?
He nods at Gigi.
He says he tried them all.
Wait, how could he have tried them all? There is no all. He'd have to try it like every second forever. Forever. Bobo shrugs. Gigi laughs.
He got lucky.
And I smile, knowing that luck is that weirdest of words, right? Like the word coincidence. Like, do things really happen randomly? By luck? Or is there some enfolding thing going on underneath it all, guiding us or shaping our experiences? Some dance of destiny and our own free will. Bobo seems to sense my searching, and he leans over and touches his forehead to mine, and I lose myself in his big black eyes. And now that forever feeling I get sometimes makes more sense. His eyes really do go on forever. And somewhere in there I see a reflection of myself. But it's not me.
Gigi, what aren't you telling me?
She fidgets.
What?
Gigi, my darling and obedient daughter, I'm your father. Tell me, or I'll ground you for the rest of your life.
Oh, you mean the next 5 hours?
I raise my eyebrows like I imagine a real father of a smart-ass teenage daughter should do when he's pissed. She knows I'm faking it, but she also knows she has to tell me. It's just a matter of time.
Okay, Dad. You got your adult diaper on tight?
Pete laughs.
You too, Uncle Pete. You got yours on tight, too?
Pete gulps. I gulp. We both gulp again.
The Bobos knew we were coming. Not because they can see into the future, they can't. But after the paradox created an enormous imbalance, before we got here, the two appeared. On the other side.
Pete asks, the two? But I already know. I don't even have to ask.
The two. Opposite Chip and opposite Pete.
New email. From Chip Collins to Julie Taylor. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, R.E., the other side.
Hi, Julie.
Great. Fucking great. We've got a multiverse to save, again. But first we have to bring balance back to the Boboverse? Come on, Gigi, cut me a break. No, I'm not doing it.
Dad, if we don't help the Bobos, we don't get Tesla and Marie back. We don't get the Murd, we don't fix the paradox, and we don't save the multiverse. See how it all works? Together? In a line of causality?
Ugh, you're just like your mother, right all the time.
I know.
She high-fives Hannah, and they snort laugh together. Wonderful. I watch the sea of Bobos turn into gatherings here and there, then one or two, I guess some loners out on hikes, although what the hell are they hiking on all the way out here? Anyway, then there are none, just the endless glimmering flatness of the event horizon. And some unmeasurable amount of time later, the ship stops gliding and lands with a clunk. We step down the gangplank onto the surface of the event horizon. Here it's transparent, and we can see movement beneath us. The other side. Our company of about a dozen Bobos leads us to the edge. I reach out and poke the membrane. And a hole opens up and sucks my arm out up to the shoulder.
Oh shit! Oh shit! I broke the Boboverse! Already! I'm dying! Save me!
Dad! Dad! Calm down. It's self-healing.
And within moments, the hole pushes my arm back in and it's gone. Good as new. Or old. Good as whatever. Gigi pulls me away from the edge a little.
They've got something, I don't know, I think they said it's a machine, that can suck you in and squirt you out to the other side. Like the one the bad guys are using to suck through our Bobos. Or if you prefer, you can get to the other side by jumping out and over the edge there. There's a local gravitational pull from the membrane that'll keep you from falling into the black hole. But don't slip. It'll cut you in half, and then both halves will fall into the black hole. So you've got two choices. Suck and squirt, or leap over the edge.
Gee, I don't know. They both sound so appealing. I turn to Pete. Whose idea was this anyway? And a voice, muffled, comes from nowhere. Mine. Wait, no, it's not from nowhere. It's from under us. I look down, and through the event horizon, I can see a face smushed up against it, like up against glass, and he's waving the middle finger at me. Yep, it's opposite Chip. Somehow, in this crazy multiverse, there's a dimension right on the other side of this pane of glass where an alternate Chip and Pete, but not just alternates, pretty much exact opposites, presumably found an opposite Tesla's lost journal, then an opposite ITA, and made their way here. Opposite Pete's right next to opposite Chip, also waving his middle finger, laughing. Okay, fuckwads, ready to rumble? I nudge Pete. Wow, your opposite's even more of a dick than mine. Then my opposite turns to opposite Pete and mimics me, sing-songy and whiny.
Your opposite's even more of a dick than mine.
Pete nudges me back. You were saying? Right, they're both 100% dicks. Gigi, remind me again why the Bobos can't do this? Why does it have to be me and Pete?
It's kind of gobbledygook, but I'm getting from them that true balance is a delicate thing. Before they can help us fix the paradox, we have to fix the balance here. And opposite Chip and Pete down there are what's throwing off the balance. They have to be met with equal and opposite force. You two. It's the only way.
I sigh. She's right, of course. There's no way I'm getting out of this one. No way I can get Pete to cover for me. Time to man up, Chip. I look at my slightly out-of-shape gut and wrinkled shirt. Hey, I don't get any armor or anything, like a laser gun?
Do you know how to use a laser gun?
Of course. I do my best Han Solo stance. You know, pew, pew, pew. The Bobos just shake their heads and hand me a stick. A stick? Are you kidding? And then the stick twirls in my hands and moves me around like a kung fu master in the movies. Whoa.
It's got something like autopilot. They thought you'd like that.
Pete grabs his stick and throws it up in the air, and it pulls him up with it like 100 yards at least into the void. And on the way down, he spins it, and it helicopters him down, and he sticks an Iron Man-style landing. Show off. He grins. Can I keep this?
They said if you save the multiverse, you can have two.
I tap the event horizon with my stick, tapping right on opposite Chip's face, still smushed against it. Now he's licking it. He shouts through the glass.
Nice stick, Chip. Sticks and stones break your bones, Chip.
Jeez, what an absolute asshole. All right, then. I'm opting out of the razor-sharp death leap. Let's do this sucky-squirty thing instead and get this over with. And Julie, maybe Gigi thought they were saying machine about the sucky-squirty thing, but she was dead wrong. It's definitely not a machine. This big worm slides down the gangplank towards us on a leash, an undulating opening on both ends. It's like a giant flexi straw from your nightmares. I'm not kidding. I involuntarily step back a foot and gag. Pete puts his hand over his mouth. It sucks onto the surface of the event horizon and gurgles a little and lets out a burp or something from the open end. I take another step back.
Dad, it's easy. You just climb in one end and come out the other.
I shudder. Oh, God. Please tell me it has two mouths, not two anuses. Those are two mouths, right, honey?
Please don't make me answer that, Dad.
Fuck. Whatever. It's never easy, is it? Okay, Pete, age before beauty. You're older than me, you idiot. And he pushes me towards the thing's mouth, or what I'm praying is a mouth. So I lay down and spread the thing's lips, again insisting this is a mouth, and shimmy into the flesh tube. Oh God, I'm going to have to stop describing this for a moment. I almost just hurled. Bear with me. Okay, I'm inside. At least it doesn't smell like worm ass in here. No gloppy mess to deal with. Whoops, spoke too soon. In the gloppiest mess ever in the history of gloppy messes, the thing shoots me out of its whatever, up in the air on the other side, and as I twirl the stick around on my way down, I fling its mucus, at least I hope it's mucus, all over the place and onto opposite Chip and Pete. They're wiping themselves off. Gross, dude! And I land in my own, okay but not perfect, Iron Man stance. My gift from the right side. Pete comes splurting out next, and yes, sticks his landing like a pro, even covered in glop. If there were gymnastics judges here, they'd be holding up tens. He shakes himself off. Okay, the good guys are here. Opposite Pete points his own stick at us. We're the good guys.
No, we are.
We are.
What grade are you in?
Fuck you grade.
Oh yeah? Fuck you grade too.
I bang my stick on the event horizon. Gentlemen, gentlemen, I'm sure we all feel like we're here for the right reasons, and that we can handle this in a mature, civilized manner.
I'm sure we can handle this in a mature, civilized manner, blah, blah, bullshit, whatever.
Opposite Chip says this in his whiny copycat voice again, as he swings his stick around, aiming for my lower back. But with just the slightest twitch, my slightest reaction, my stick turns me and goes vertical and blocks the blow. Opposite Chip and I stand there glaring at each other in one of those forever moments. I grin. It's on, motherfucker. And I throw my stick to Pete, as he throws his to me, and on the way, both sticks turn in the air and strike their targets. We catch the sticks, and opposite Chip and Pete go down. They look unconscious. That was easy. I look down through the event horizon and shout to Gigi, okay, suck us back up. Well, that's what I would have said anyway, if opposite Chip hadn't kicked me right in the balls. I fall to my knees, then into a fetal position, groaning. Pete shouts at opposite Chip, hey, no kicking in the balls. Opposite Chip laughs as he gets up. What are these, medieval Parisian wrestling rules? Pete grunts. Okay, no rules then? The way I see it, there's only one rule. If you kill us, you get your precious balance in this universe, and maybe, just maybe, fix that big-ass orange paradox near the ITA. If we kill you, we get the exact opposite. Imbalance, destruction, and an invitation to the real party, the shit under the shit. I stand and laugh. Huh, the shit under the shit. Wow, so well spoken. Dare I say, erudite. You must be a scientist, or a poet, or both. You sure do like talking, Chip, he nods to opposite Pete. Let's see you talk with two punctured lungs. And they both hurl themselves towards me, sticks out, about to perforate my favorite breathing apparatus. But all Pete has to do is raise his stick a little, and it lifts him into the air, and he chops down, ramming both of their sticks to the ground, sending the two opposites flying over him. Before I can even check if my lungs can still take in oxygen, though, the opposites are up and running back at us. And the music starts. I swear to God, Julie, these Bobos and their opposites love their music. They've cranked up some serious electronic dance hip-hop fight music for our little show here, like a boom joom chaka boom boom chaka chaka boom boom chaka boom boom chaka chaka. And by show, I mean hand-to-hand combat that will determine the fate of the Boboverse, and in turn all of physical reality. I look down and notice a little notch in my stick, and some instinct tells me to pull. I do, and the stick extends into nunchucks. Oh yeah, time for full matrix. I take a running leap, and the chucks drag me into the air above opposite Chip. I slam both his ears, and he yelps in pain. He jumps up and throws his stick, and I barely have time to move my chin out of the way, but it catches my cheek and sends me crashing down. Opposite Chip gloats. Aw, your face hurt, Chip? It's killing me. Oh yeah? Here comes some really clever comeback. He stands there, taps his toe. Well? Now, too much pressure. I have a hard time with clever comebacks when you're waiting for it. He decides to cut our not-so-clever conversation short and runs straight at me again. But I've got both our sticks still, mine and opposite Chip's, twirling them both, keeping that douche at bay, and I make my way over to the Pete's. Meanwhile, Pete and opposite Pete are fighting so close and so fast they hardly look like two people. They're doing flips and shit, and Pete would never admit it, but he's clearly enjoying himself. He's finally found a worthy foe. I scream over the music, hey Pete, incoming! And he stops just for a moment, allowing me to slip in. Now we're standing back to back, almost touching, three of these amazing sticks using our weight and balance and momentum to fight like a fucking tornado. Man, I've never felt anything like this. Julie, if you saw me, you'd say, okay, who stole Chip and carved him into a skin suit and stretched it over a ninja? It's unreal. We're definitely winning. We're moving as we're fighting, getting closer to the edge, maybe a little too close, trading blows, but keeping our core. I can feel it. Balance will be ours. This rocks. And then my foot disappears. I look down and watch as my foot, my furry foot, my second favorite foot, escapes the membrane's local gravity and gets pulled into the black hole in a spurt of blood. Opposite Chip is laughing, holding my leg outside the membrane, over the edge where he just cut off my fucking foot. You had a furry foot? He throws off his shoe to show me his not furry foot. This is what a normal foot looks like, you freak. I can't help it, I'm getting woozy, oh the blood. But my curiosity gets the best of me and I stay conscious. Wait, you never got your foot cut off? And Bobo never puked his flesh on it? To save Tesla? Save Tesla? We never even met Tesla. Tesla's dead, dude. A flash of anger rises in me. No, he's not. Take that back. No, he's not. Take that back. You whiny priss. He's dead, you schmuck. And you're joining him. And he grabs my head and pushes it hard out through the membrane and down to the edge. I am literally looking at something so sharp I cannot see it, so thin it doesn't even have a third dimension, like looking at a razor blade on its edge. I'm pushing like hell against opposite Chip's hands, and I can feel the very tip of my nose slicing open, like a paper cut. And suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I see a figure hurtling out from the membrane, past our little local gravity, into the void, getting sucked into the black hole, screaming. I whisper to opposite Chip, "I can't move my head to see. Please tell me that was your Pete." He grinds his teeth and spits in my face. "Yes, damn it, my Pete. Now tell your Pete to back off." Another little push, a millimeter further, and blood starts leaking from the cut in my nose. Pete, don't do anything. I don't think I can grow back a head." Pete backs up and growls, "Your move, asshole." Man, this is like the worst stalemate ever. If opposite Chip kills me, I mean, that would be the worst outcome for obvious reasons. I like having my head attached to my body. But if we back off, he wins, right? So I'm thinking, the hell with it. If I do myself right now, Pete can take out opposite Chip, restore balance, and get this show back on the road. Everyone's put themselves on the line for me too many times to count. Time for me to even the score. Goodbye, Julie. Goodbye, Gigi.
"No, Dad."
Damn, it's her, Gigi. She's inches away from me on the other side. She knows what I'm about to do. I send her a telepathic thought. "Honey, strange and dangerous things happen out here. Get back on the ship now." But before the next thought can even exit my head to her, opposite Chip grins like he's found a way out of this stalemate. In one smooth move, he releases my head, using it as a lever, and leaps through the membrane, over the edge, and through the membrane on the other side. Gigi tries to run back to the ship, but it's no use. He's got her.
"No!"
I jump up, on my one foot, without thinking, leaping through the membrane, off balance, and instantly start tumbling backwards instead of forwards, my head flipping back toward the edge. Great. Who needs opposite Chip? I'll just decapitate myself. Wonderful. But then, I've got you. It's Pete, zooming past me, grabbing me by the hair and flinging both of us, planting his stick like a pole vault, hurtling us over the edge and back into our side. We tumble stickless and rush to our feet. Well, Pete rushes to his feet and I rush to my foot. Maybe 10 yards from opposite Chip. He's got Gigi in a chokehold. Poor Gigi. Her face is turning purple and she's gasping for little sips of air. He's backed against the ship, keeping all the Bobos and us at bay. Anyone moves, she dies. New email from Chip Collins to Gigi Collins. Date, February 29, 2020. Subject, "I love you." "Dear Gigi, it's true, you know, what they say about being a parent, how your kid's pain hurts you even more. I'm watching you now, fighting for breath, fighting for your life, and I stand here helpless. It hurts like hell. It reminds me of that time you choked on a dried apricot while we were in the park last summer. You were strangely quiet, so I looked into your stroller, and you had this look of absolute terror on your 13-month-old face. You couldn't understand why air wasn't getting down into your lungs. I've never seen fear like that. I stopped and pulled you out, but realized in that eternity of a moment, I didn't know CPR. I had no idea how to help you. Do I do the Heimlich maneuver? Do I jam my fingers down your throat and try to pull it out? Do I turn you upside down? A million thoughts raced through my mind, and in those infinite milliseconds, I hurt like I'd never hurt before, at how helpless I was against a stupid dried apricot. By the time my rational brain kicked in a couple of more milliseconds later, the emergency was over, as the miracle that is the human body had worked its magic, convulsing your stomach and your throat, getting that apricot and everything you had for the past 24 hours up and out, and onto me. I laughed and laughed and swung you around, your puke whirling out onto concerned onlookers, and even you laughed through your tears, forgetting instantly what all the fuss was about, and I've never felt a wash of love like that in my whole life. Boy, I was happy not to have to MacGyver that piece of fruit out of you, but I would have. I would have done anything to keep you alive, and that's when I knew I was a dad, for real. I would do anything for you, Gigi. I would give my life, or more, if I could. I love you. And here I stand, helpless again, while you choke for air. Just tell me what you want, asshole." Opposite Chip laughs. "Man, that was too easy. So is that what it's like to have a kid? Even though you know you're all going to die, you can't bear to see her go first? Being a parent turns you into a blob of mush? You have no idea. I sniff back my sobs. Tell me, asshole. Let's get this over with.
Isn't it obvious? You and Dickhead Pete, into the black hole. It'll create the perfect imbalance. Then nothing can stop the paradox. Do it. Now.
He tightens his hold around Gigi's neck and she looks close to passing out. Oh well, I guess I'm not helpless after all. There is something I can do for you. I know it doesn't make any sense that all of physical reality will wind up as a charred ash and a memory, but I don't care right now because in this infinite moment, you're the only thing that matters. I know that makes me selfish, but I love you, and there's nothing else I can do. I turn and hop toward the membrane. Pete doesn't even hesitate and joins me. He whispers, "You can stop hopping at least. Your foot grew back." And I look down and wouldn't you know, a new foot. And it's not even furry. I smile at the irony of it all, that all I had to do to fix my furry foot problem was cut it off and a new, more chip DNA one would grow back, completely normal. And I find this out moments before sending myself into a supermassive black hole. So I start walking, if you can call what I'm doing with one shoe off walking, and we approach the membrane and I silently tell you I love you again, and Julie too. I loved you so much, and Pete, and Nicola, and Gina, shit, everyone. We get to the edge. I tentatively reach out to touch the membrane so it can suck us out into the void and... clunk! We stop, whirl around, ready for anything. You're bent over, sucking in deep breaths. Opposite ship is knocked out cold on the ground, and standing on the gangplank halfway down, Hannah, with a giant plumber's wrench in her hand. Sweet little Hannah, who's barely made a peep this entire time, who's gone virtually unnoticed by everyone, including opposite Chip, just knocked that asshole out with a fucking plumber's wrench. Damn, who knew fading into the woodwork was her superpower? I turned to Pete. Now, don't ask me why the Bobos have a plumber's wrench on that ship, but man, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Hannah just sent opposite Dickhead into bye-bye land. Pete grins and puffs out his chest, prouder than I think I've ever seen him. That's my girl. You run to her, Hannah, your lifelong friend, and you both embrace and laugh the relief laugh of getting your life back, and maybe the life of the multiverse, that feeling that me and Pete have felt many times. Aw, check them out. They're like Chip and Pete, the next generation. God help them. I wonder if they'll say dude all the time. And I wonder who'll be more annoying. Hey, see that hug? That's what I'm always after. The victory hug. Just like that. Dude, check the score. We've probably hugged 6 times since college. That's plenty. That's 6 times too many, actually. But he's smiling when he says it, still with the proud papa look on his face, and he punches me in the shoulder. He walks over to opposite Chip's limp body and gives it a kick. Now, back to reality. Let's reunite this asshole with the other one. And he goes over and hefts opposite Chip over his shoulder and runs towards the edge. Right at the end of his little runway, he stops short and lets the momentum carry opposite Chip through the membrane and into the supermassive black hole at the center of the Boboverse. We watch as he gets smaller and smaller and disappears into... Hey, Gigi, do the Bobos have any idea where these two clowns wind up? No. Like I said, completely random. They'll be alive, but they're going to have a hell of a headache. Like, imagine the headache you'd have if you experienced the Big Bang. Ouch. Yeah, I've got a general sense of what that might feel like. Poor opposite Chip. Pete laughs as he picks up Hannah and twirls her around. And poor opposite Pete. I clap my hands. Okay, we got the mojo back. I look down and admire my new addition. And I've got a new foot again. This time, sans fur, so extra bonus. I'll have to thank opposite Chip for that little accidental favor later. But for now, our side quest is finished. Good job, Hannah. Let's get back to... And there's a rumble. And an orange bolt of lightning streaks across the void above.